This is Max Freedom Long, fellow of the Una Fellowship, speaking again. A few personal questions have been put to me from time to time, and it seems to me that the answers to these might be of general interest. Let me take up a few. There's been quite a little curiosity about the name I am giving you, Max Freedom Long. That is a little story in itself. I inherited the name Freedom from an uncle who was born just when the slaves were freed, so they named him Freedom. And in my turn, I inherited the name, and so I became Max Freedom Long. A number of years ago, I started to write the murder mysteries, and for those, I signed myself Max Long. I wrote three of them for Lippincott before I got as many murder mysteries out of my system as I wished. And then I started to write about the Hoona lore. And to keep the two separate, I used my middle name for signing the Hoona books. And those were all signed Max Freedom Long, but the murder mysteries were all just Max Long. The murder mysteries are long since out of print. Most of my friends call me Max. There's another question about where do I live? How do I live? What is the circumstance of my life? I live in Vista, which is a little town of about 10,000 scattered all over the hillside. It's a country district. We farm out here. We have ranches with avocados and oranges and cattle ranches and retirement places. There's an old house on the side of a hill, and below a grove. We have about 3.5 acres here, and we moved here 15 years ago, my wife, who has been gone for over 2 years now, and our partner of the years, Miss Ethel Doherty. My wife and Miss Doherty were writing partners. They wrote the books and short stories and things like that together. And before they started to work just with fiction, they had spent 16 years writing for the motion pictures. Then when I got started to writing about the kahunas, and the search was on for the whole of the kahuna lore, they began to help me with my writing. And after a while, they gave up their own writing in order to give me full time with my work. The first book that I wrote about it was called Recovering the Ancient Magic, and it was published in England. And it sold about 700 copies that went more or less around the world. And then along came the Blitz, and the books were all burned. The publishers were out of business for quite a while. And I wanted the book in print over in America, but I couldn't get a publisher here. So I rewrote it several times, and 7 years passed. I brought it up to date. I was constantly studying in spare times, learning more about the Hoona system. And one day I ran into Wing Anderson, who sells books by mail. And he looked at the book and said, I can sell this. So he brought it out and sold it by mail. A little bit later on, we organized the people who'd written in who were interested in the secret science behind miracles and wanted to carry on experimental work to see if we could duplicate the healing work of the kahunas. So we started to experiment, and we organized the Hoona Research Associates. I put out a bulletin and reported all of our activities, laid out the experiments, and we tried to organize groups. Things moved along rapidly then. That was in 1948 that this started. Then I wrote a second book reporting our activities, what we did, and it is called The Secret Science at Work. And by that time, Mr. Anderson did not wish to continue publishing my work. He had the idea that a sequel to a first successful book never would pay off. So I got him to let me have the names of the people who had purchased the first book by mail from him, and I became my own publisher with the help of Miss Doherty, the partner, and my wife, Louise. We made a closer partnership and went into the writing and selling the publishing business. And we've been in it now ever since, and are still selling the books by mail. Miss Doherty is still taking care of the bookkeeping and the general supervision of the accounting department. I make up the orders, send out the books, go to the post office, do the marketing, and the cooking and housekeeping has now fallen to my lot. My main task is answering many, many letters. I get so many letters, and my answers have to be very, very short. I make what I call a tin letter. The tin letter is a little bit British and would go for a mimeographed form letter. I leave a margin on that. I make them up about once a month with my general personal news or news of the activities. And then write a little note, unless somebody has written me a long letter asking so many questions that I have to take a special sheet of paper for that. I no longer have time for visitors, I'm sad to say. And I've been able to get some help. I've prayed my way through to get help with the grove. I have about 100 trees that have to be irrigated and looked after. They're avocado trees. And they make a nice grove, and we're sheltered sort of in a little seclusion up here behind the top of the grove and under a very tall pine tree. Some call it a larch. Now I have also prayed through a housekeeper. So once a week we have a very nice woman to come and clean house. I have no secretary, and I wouldn't have time to dictate the letters to a secretary and then have them typed off. It would take more time than to throw a tinned letter into the typewriter and pound off a very short reply. I may say that I get into a good many jams and that I usually am able to pray my way through on it. Part of the equipment is a printing equipment. I have a big job press, I have a big mimeograph and a folder, and I print my own advertising. The books are all printed in the East by a big concern. And I get out a little bulletin every other month. It's called the Huna Vistas. And all of you can have the Huna Vistas if you wish to join as Huna Research Associates. Everyone pays their share of the expense of getting these out, and that amounts to about $2 a year. If a person wishes back issues to catch up with the work and to get information that isn't in the book, those are also available for the Huna Vistas, but no longer for the very earliest bulletins. The old stencils all wore out of the very earliest ones. I had a question come in by letter the other day that was very interesting. The question was asked, don't you think that you have made several mistakes when you invented what you call Huna? How do you know that the ancient kahunas believed all of the things that you say? The evidence of the language is so strong that if a person really wishes to acquaint themselves with the origin of Huna, it's all there for the digging. I must say that I was really very much flattered with the idea that I was smart enough to invent Huna. That seemed to have taken divine inspiration or something to perfect a system of psychology so wonderful as that of Huna. But I take a bow just the same and wish that I had been smart enough to invent it. It must be understood that the code that I broke to understand the beliefs of the kahunas was a language code. I opened the dictionary just at random to see if I could find some examples of this. This is the Hawaiian English Dictionary. And is nearly 100 years old. It gives the root meanings and the general meanings. And I happen to turn to the pages where words that have the root la in it. La means a path, a way, a light, and if you double the A to la'a, it means sacred. And it is a symbol that stands for the high self. The high self is the third member of our trinity of three selves. Here's some of the words that are made up with the la root. La lao, L-A-L-A-U. To feel after or to feel for a thing is what the second root, L-A-U, means. And it also means to make a mistake. And the general meaning of the word altogether is to do wrong, to sin. If a person takes the law root and the mistake root, then you can see there that to sin is to make a mistake about getting in contact with the high self, to do things that the high self, the law root, would not have you do. And most sins are mistakes instead of actively wrongdoing. Then here is a word, who, which means to make or to cause, la le lele. Who la le lele means to inspire, as a speaker who is inspired by the gods and who begins to speak in a wonderful way and to teach and to tell wonderful things. The la root there is the high self. And then the le le lele means to jump, 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 or to fly upwards. And you ask yourself, there is the high self, and what is it that flies upward? Why, of course, it's the prayer that flies upward along the accord to the high self, and it's the vital force, the mana. And the word in there has a number of other little explanations that can be worked out from the lay roots, but that is the main one. It's a very fine example of the code. Then take a next word, lana, L-A-N-A. Notice your L-A, your high self root. And the next part of it is kila, lana kila, K-I-L-A. They really should be kila. And that means to be strong, to be able to be victorious, to overcome, and to brave, be brave. The la root is the high self, and lana as a whole means a cord or a rope. And what cord? Why, the aka cord that goes to the high self, the la, the high self root right there. And if you are in contact with your own high self, you will be strong, you will be confident, you will be able, you will be victorious, you will be brave. All through the Old Testament, as well as especially in the four Gospels of the New Testament, we run into the references to the light. Jesus said, my burden is light. The word for light, that is light in weight, is lana, lana, L-A-N-A, L-A-N-A. And what do the two roots mean? They mean nothing else but cords. And why should we say our burden is light because of the cords? Simply because of the law root telling us that we must get in touch with the high self and let it do its third of the work. The teamwork must be done by the three selves to do it well, to do the work easily, and to do it without being burdened. To get back to the questions that have been asked, I've been asked so frequently, are you a kahuna? Do you do healing? Are there any kahunas left? Or do you do any kind of counseling? The answer to that is no. I have not attempted to do those things. I've stayed with the research to find out how they can be done as far as possible. I've been hunting for the secret of instant healing, so that we can get on with that. I do no counseling, and the only thing in the healing line is the telepathic mutual healing group work, which was started along in 1949 and is still going. It's described step by step in my book, The Secret Science at Work. And from the signatures or the little pictures that are sent in to me, I send out a prayer to the individual, and I ask all of them to send mana to me, but read the account in Secret Science behind, in the Secret Science at Work, and you'll see about the healing efforts. We often get surprisingly good results, even at a distance. This is absent treatment, but done with the contact of the ACA thread to the person, and holding them all to the light of the high self and asking it, it's group prayer. And those prayer sessions come at 3 o'clock and at 7 o'clock, that's afternoon and evening, every day right through the year. We change time here in California to the daylight and to the regular time, and I follow the changes right along. So many questions come up about the psychometric analysis readings. And people send me their signatures, and some send me a whole envelope full of signatures and say, please read these for me. In my little book on this subject, I said quite plainly, I thought, that I was not able to make a great many readings, that people should learn to do these for themselves, get their friends to make the readings, and then check that there was only one Max Long, and he didn't have time to do very much of the reading for them. Once in a great while, I'm able to get a little time. At the present time, I have a long list of names waiting for the time, if I can find time, to make readings. And it must be remembered that sometimes my readings are not right. So everything has to be taken with a grain of salt. Psychometric analysis is based on psychometry. And anything that has to go through the low self and depend on it is subject to error. No, the kahunas did not make a psychometric analysis reading. That is a foregone conclusion. That's quite a modern thing. But they did use the subconscious and its powers in many very amazing ways. One of the new Huna fellows wrote in anxiously to know if there was not some element of suggestion being used when we made the prayers in healing circles. And was this not perhaps dangerous? In my reply, I said that we could not avoid the element of suggestion in any way with any of these things, that the suggestion was just a very natural thing that took place all the time in our daily conversations with each other. We are constantly suggesting things, good, bad, and indifferent. We set examples, and telepathically we send suggestions. That is usually not recognized, but there is a telepathic sending of thoughts from one person to the other. And, of course, where suggestion is being used in hypnosis, that is a very powerful type of suggestion and is something quite different from what most of the classes are able to do or to use, although we have two classes in which we have expert hypnotists who can be called upon, and one class in which we have both a hypnotist and also a good medium who has spirit guides who can call in spirit help. And they have been busily engaged getting rid of the spirits who have been causing trouble by obsessing people, more or less. The kahunas were the only ones who had a theory or a knowledge of just what happened when suggestion was used. They used mesmerism. And they also used hypnosis. They were quite expert in those things. And they spoke of a suggestion as the planting of a thought, the planting of a thought. And where was it planted? It was planted in the mind of the person to whom the thought was given. In my book, Self-Suggestion, I have given the theory of the kahunas, and it's the only theory that we have as yet in scientific or psychological or metaphysical circles to explain. The whole thing is very simple. A thought form is real. It's invisible. It's made of what you might say the shadowy or aka substance, but it's like a little phonograph plate. It has an impression made on a little piece of this very thin material. And then added to that is a charge of vital force which stays with it for quite a long time. Sometimes if it's highly charged and the little record is played over and over, the charge never dies down. We accept the thought forms and the ideas, especially if they are spoken impressively by our friends. They say, well, how well you look today. And if they're impressive people, we immediately begin to feel better. We feel well. But if they say, you're looking pretty peaked today, I think you're sick, then perhaps you pick up the suggestion. It's the low self always that picks up the suggestion. The middle self may take a little part in it. And we think, well, maybe we aren't as good today as we thought we were. The low self accepts a suggestion when it's off guard. The middle self stands between it and the external suggestion. A person who knows his work and is able to handle himself in these circles can resist the suggestion even from a highly trained hypnotist. The middle self simply rationalizes everything. If the hypnotist suggests you're going to sleep, you're going to sleep, why, your middle self says, no, we're not going to sleep, we're not going to sleep. And your low self has been trained to obey its master, that is, its own middle self, and it resists the suggestion. But when the person is in a sound sleep or is in a trance, like sleep, then the middle self does not screen the ideas and they go into the low self and very often stick there and with their charge of vital force, so that when something starts them going, something starts the little record playing, why, it will play, and that is called a fixation or a complex of ideas. We get these little fixations accidentally, sometimes in accidents when we're unconscious. And somebody said, I think he's going to die. Well, when we wake up and become conscious, we have a subconscious idea that we are going to die, so we proceed slowly to die. There are many things written about the shock complex, the complex that comes when you're suddenly startled by seeing someone badly hurt. It affects the low self. The reason the professional hypnotist puts a person to sleep is because after he once gets his subject to a trance-like sleep, then the middle self is out of the way and he can put very powerfully vitalized ideas, thought pictures with plenty of mana. He can plant those thoughts in the subconscious of the patient. And if they are good thoughts of the healed conditions, good thoughts of good action, thoughts that are strong enough to counteract bad things such as the drink habit or smoking or things of that kind, the low self will react to those very strongly and a person can be greatly helped. There's nothing to be feared from hypnosis if your operator is honest and reliable. It is the scandal of the whole profession of hypnosis that the stage shows have been given, and that here and there a scoundrel has given very bad suggestions to try to control somebody and in some way make him give up his property or do things that he ordinarily would not do. But for our purposes, the ordinary suggestion having to do with healing or helping, those are all good things. There's nothing there to be. Of course, the best suggestion of them all is the self-suggestion. That is what my little book is all about. Having taken up the theory and explained it, then I go on page after page to give the methods of administering suggestion to yourself. And that is a very helpful thing. If a person can learn to use self-suggestion, then he has his low self quite well in hand for everything except the hidden fixations and the hidden complexes, which are difficult to handle because we don't know what they are or where they are until something might do what they call trigger it off, to set the record on the machine and start it playing furiously, when we do something unreasonable and illogical and wonder, why did I do that? Why did I suddenly fly into a rage when somebody said that little thing that, why, that didn't, they could call me that, I shouldn't fly into a rage. They touched off a complex. Some place in the early days, somebody had called you that, and perhaps it hit you over the head, and a complex, a fixation had been established. A slow building type of fixation is found frequently. It is a subconscious set of opinions and desires that get fixed. For instance, doctors find that when they have a person in bed for some time and waited on hand and foot and given books and candy and flowers, they come to enjoy it, and the low self, not having to do any work, not having to exert itself, gradually builds what might be called a complex of desires. It desires the attention, the love, the freedom, the laziness. And the result of that is that the low self keeps the whole man sick so that they can enjoy invalidism. The doctors are very anxious, those who understand their psychology especially, to get the patient out of bed as soon as they can, get them to taking care of themselves, get them back on the job. Freud and some of the earlier psychologists discovered the fixation or the complex, and then they went on from there to try to unearth it from the subconscious by various means, by examining symbols in dreams, by using suggestion. But suggestion isn't very good to bring up a fixation, because you don't know how to suggest to bring up that fixation. If you knew just what the fixation was, you could make it surface with hypnotic suggestion, but as hypnosis was not a very good tool for what we now know as the couch. You get on the couch and you begin to tell all of the things that come into your mind, and your psychiatrist listens and watches for all the familiar symbols, or new ones, and may here and there come upon the cause of some erratic action, some psychotic condition. Some people are just burdened with fixations. Others are quite free from them. But 2 years or 3 years of going an hour a week to have your complexes looked into is not an unusual thing at all. Most of us manage to live quite handily with our fixations. We occasionally get tripped up by them. Somebody occasionally will say some little thing that will throw us into a tizzy of some sort and will cause us to mutter in our beards for a while. But most of us get along fairly well. A great many of the little fixations are fixations that are not bad. They are just little things that make us react in a slightly irrational or peculiar way that may cause no special. We may dislike cats. We may have some food articles that we simply can't stand, the phobias. We may have some things that we are entirely too fond of for no reason at all. We just think that certain things are wonderful. And once in a while, we get a fixation and just must have a certain white elephant, whether or not, and it's not a rational belief, but it can be traced back to some infantile or accidental fixation that has been started. I spoke to you at length in one of the recent lectures about the spirits that come to live with us and to feed on our vital force, the mana, and the one kahuna that I knew in a way called them eating companions, because they were close. They came around and fed on the vital force. They may not obsess us greatly, or they may obsess us and influence us slightly, or to a large extent, if they take over entirely, why then we are insane. One of the difficulties that faces the psychiatrist is to tell the difference between an obsession and a fixation. And as the psychiatrist is trained to deny the possibility that there is spirit influence or that there can be spirits, he has very little chance to even try to tell the difference. But with our psychometric analysis readings, we can tell with just a very simple reading with the pendulum whether we are fighting or are working with obsession, with an eating companion. And we can tell whether it is a normal spirit that has a low and a middle self that has come to bother the person, or whether it is just a low self that has attached itself, or whether it's just a middle self that has attached itself. Spirits sometimes get separated after death. And, of course, there are the good spirits, the spirit guides, who do not show in the ordinary PA reading unless you ask for them. If you ask if they are there, then you will be given the proper swing, and you can make a reading for the guide. See how good it is and how smart it is. And you can also read for the eating companion. Sometimes you'll find two or three of them. Some are smart, some are not. Some are very good, some are entirely bad. But in that, we are about 15 jumps ahead of the psychiatrist. And we must add, thanks to the kahunas and to the biometer, who measure the thing, which measures for us with the pendulum, the things which the kahunas have identified. I have a friend here in Vista, Dr. Riley Crabb. He's a doctor of metaphysics, and every once in a while he finds a little time to try to work with somebody who has an obscure type of illness to find out what is wrong. And invariably, the first thing that he looks into and goes to see is whether they enjoy illness or not, whether they are clinging to their illness, or the thing that gets them attention, gets them a little bed rest, gets them the things that they may enjoy. If they think that they are punishing themselves for their own guilt, that's a subconscious idea, that they are guilty and they must make sacrifices and be punished or suffer from what they so often call karma, with the wrong idea of karma, quite entirely wrong. That's the first thing that Dr. Crabb inquires into, and he tells me that very frequently he finds that he can't do a thing with a person who has this desire to remain ill. They won't respond. They resist all effort to give them the right steering and the right help to get them out of their kinks. Dr. Crabb and his wife, Judy, by the way, edit and publish the journal of the BSRA, the Borderland Science Research Associates. They cover everything from flying saucers down to the very newest ideas in electronics and things that are what we call occult. It is with their assistance that I've been able to get the lectures going. Dr. Crabb and his wife have gone to the next village a number of times, have bought me recorders, have bought me the empty tapes, and their assistance has been greatly appreciated. If you should like to subscribe to their journal, drop me a line and I'll give you their address. If you have any idea that you are suffering from a deep-seated enjoyment of invalidism in some way or other, sit down, relax, and make the test by imagining yourself completely free of all illnesses, all Charlie horses, all of the things that are bothering you. You are in abounding health. You are ready to do anything that you wish to do, things that you have not been able to do on account of physical difficulties. Now, while you're holding that image in your mind, watch your subconscious reaction. See whether you find welling up from the subconscious a reluctance to do these things, to make a foray out into the world, to get a job, to do the things that a person would do, completely healthy, to be away from the handicaps. If you find a little peculiar welling up of the subconscious clinging to some condition associated with the handicaps, then study yourself carefully and study your subconscious and talk to yourself like a Dutch uncle in very assorted spare times through the day, and especially before you go to sleep, to train the subconscious to let go, to not cling to illness or any of the things that illness might keep you from doing or make you able to. I once had a peculiar experience. I was in college in Los Angeles. I had been amusing myself weekends lecturing on various metaphysical things, including the kahunas, two groups in a metaphysical center. Then the rather driving owner of the center and manager insisted that I give a series of pay lectures. And I said, I don't lecture for pay. Well, she said, that's the way we support ourselves, and you must give a series of lectures. I said, I don't know what I would lecture about that it'd be worth anybody's time. She said, well, you've spoken of meditation. Said, you give a series of lectures on meditation. And I said, well, I don't know enough about meditation. Oh, yes, you do. She says, I've already put you down for the lecture. I tried to back out of it and tried my best, and I simply couldn't do it. So she scheduled me for the following Sunday and signed up a class, and it was to be a pay class. So when it came that Sunday, I was in bed with the flu, with a temperature of 104. My subconscious had found a very fine way to avoid what I didn't want and what it didn't want. So we had the flu, and whether the two are connected exactly or not, that's what happened. And you have to watch your step a little when you are triggered off on something of that nature. In all of these things, and trying to live with complexes or get around them, remember always the paraphrase that I have borrowed from modern advertisers. It said, I've forgotten about some starch. If you're not using this certain starch, you're working too hard. And now I paraphrase that and say, if you are not using HUNA, you are working too hard. And by the same token, you can tell yourself that if you're not daily asking your high self to take its full and rightful part as a member of your three-self team, you are working far too hard. If it is in the team, it will help you with fixations and with all kinds of things that might otherwise trip you up. The things that we try to do by ourselves, and we try and try, and then suddenly we say, well, why didn't I ask the high self to help me? And so you pray your way right through the thing there with the help of the high self. And may I add, always remember to give thanks when you realize that the high self has helped you with its greater wisdom and power. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. We read in the words of Jesus. A yoke is a thing that holds two members of a team together. If you had three oxen together, your yoke would yoke three oxen. And the yoke is for the high self and for the lesser man. And it's easy. It is a lightener of burdens. So remember, always, if you live a hurtless life, you are able to call upon your high self and have it come and help you in every little task, almost from the difficulty of washing the dishes in the morning when you are in a great hurry, to meeting some problem which seems insoluble to you. And pay for the help with love and gratitude. That amounts to worship. You will gain confidence, and you will be given faith in return. I want to speak of a rather priceless thing that we as Hunafulas, and who plan to develop healing circles, should know and should use. It is a sleep suggestion. In other words, it is sending a suggestion to a sleeping person, and while you yourself are asleep. The mechanism is very simple. Before you go to bed, you tell yourself, your subconscious, you say, I am wish now and I am determined, use your will. When I am asleep, you will go out along the ACA thread to our friend, name them, and if you can, say where they are, but don't tell the friend that you're going to treat them in this way, or they may put a barrier up. Go to them telepathically, make the contact like you do in making the PA readings from a signature. You might put the friend's picture or signature under your pillow, touch it with your hand, and make the suggestion of help, whatever the condition is, or the suggestion of the ability to meet a problem, of strength, whatever your friend needs. This is a system that was worked out clear back in 1893 by Thomas J. Hudson. He was a Ph.D. and an LL.D., a learned man whose book, The Law of Psychic Phenomena, is only found in old bookstores. It's been long out of print. And he discovered that by this method of making sleep suggestion, he could do wonderful things in healing. He got wonderful results. Back in October, 8 years and a month ago, we explored the idea in Juna Vista number 14, and on page 7, I made an outline of some of the things that he had written down in chapter 14 of the book. That was something that we tried out in the Juna Research Associates work. We had reports in from time to time, and I have used this system off and on for all the years since that. And now we're coming to the end of our lecture, and I congratulate all of you as being chosen. You are of the elite. You are fellows of the Juna Fellowship, and as such, I now wish you my aloha.